It's October 29th, 2022. Ward Green here. The time, 13:34 hours. The colder weather's definitely here now. Just last night, I had to keep my bedroom door almost closed in order to keep heat, to allow the heater to keep the room warm. So I know it was 63 at one point on my thermostat in the hallway, but it certainly wasn't that cold in the bedroom, fortunately. But I've got a down sleeping bag too on the bed, so I can survive almost any kind of weather in the house, even if my heaters are not functioning. The down sleeping bag will be a good tool to have, but I've got, it's like, I was thinking today too about material possessions. They're not, it's not good to have material possessions unless those material possessions really do serve a purpose in your life, that you need them for something. And I know I had this, there's an experience I want to try and, I had an experience that I wanted to share, but I can't remember what it was that I wanted to share. It was a long time ago. But we have these experiences, and it's not related to material possessions necessarily. I can't remember what it is. I can't remember right now, but hopefully it'll come back again. They usually do. I mean, I won't forget the experience. It's just that I, you know, it'll come back to me hopefully around, you know, in the context of sharing it, so that I'll be able to share it with you. But what else? I mean, if we think back to some of the experiences we've had, I've had experiences in working for companies or in an organization, various places and various times during my life of 65 years now. But a good part of my life, I was not employed with a company. For example, from age, well, what year was that? Well, late 1984, so actually, how many years did I say that was? Yeah, 4 years. I said it was 5 years, but it's 4 years and some months after I quit the use of drugs completely, forever, kind of thing, at that point. Never to return. But, you know, you're always one day at a time. You stay away from something one day at a time. But 4 years and some months after I gave up drugs, of any kind, like I don't take any kind of drugs at all, like aspirin or used to be aspirin, but, you know, Advil or whatever they take now, all that stuff. None of that. After I gave that up, 4 years later and some months, I moved here with my wife, and I was employed off and on for a few years. Well, I became a mail contractor, and my wife did that for 5 years. That's right, at least 5 years. Did she do it another five after that? I think probably she did, because the contract was renewed. It was a five-year contract, I think. Is that right, or was it a one-year contract? I'm not sure how long the contract was now. Probably it was a one-year contract, maybe. But maybe it was a five-year, because, yeah, I don't know. Can't remember that. But she did it. She did the mail for a long time, but it was under my contract that I had gotten from the government to do the mail. From the government, right? The mail is part of the government in Canada, certainly. I guess it is everywhere. There's the U.S. Postal Service, you know, and the Canada Post and so on. So we had some kind of work, but I wasn't working every day, so I would do whatever I needed to do around the house or whatever, you know, like I would, but I'd spent a lot of time sleeping and resting and so on, but I wasn't even very healthy in those days at all. I needed to sleep a lot. I had chronic fatigue syndrome, and then eventually I found calcium around the year 2000, sometime around, I think in 1999, I found out about calcium and started to question whether I should take calcium, and then after several months of debating it in my mind, should I take calcium, I finally started to take it. But anyway, when I started making recordings was in about 85, so that was 5 years after I, or almost 5 years after I had quit using any kind of drugs. The only drugs I really was occasionally using at that time when I quit was marijuana anyway, but I didn't drink much at all, or smoke, or anything, or vape. Back then, vape was not a thing. We didn't have that. But, I mean, I didn't smoke or vape or do any drugs or anything like that. Except at that time, in just before 1980, or just before 81, just before the fall of 80, of 1980, I would still use marijuana occasionally. Marijuana, though, refers to all sorts of things, like hashish is another form of it, and you've got something called honey oil, which is also used, which was a much more potent form of, and it might have had other things in it besides marijuana in terms of active ingredients. I'm not sure what it had in it. And you would drop these things, like you could smoke hashish by dropping a chunk of it on the end of a cigarette. So I didn't smoke, but you could have cigarettes for that purpose. You also had honey oil that you would drop a drop of it on the end of the cigarette, and it would ignite, but you would need to use a hollow tube to gather that smoke to get it into your lungs. So it would be either a cardboard, you know, toilet paper or paper towel roll, or you could, I mean, we didn't use that. I mean, I think we always used a Bic pen, a hollow Bic pen. That was what I was the most familiar with. You could use anything, but we used a hollow Bic pen. But that was an addiction to marijuana that was causing this use of these things like hashish and honey oil. And I'm trying to think of the, well, there's hash oil too. Yeah, same thing. But it was just strictly, and it wasn't clear oil like honey oil, and it didn't have other additives in it, but it was just hashish purified down. You could have weed, oh yeah, that's right, weed oil or marijuana oil too. We had all those things, which was a distillation. Again, I think I've talked about this, I'll talk about it some other time, about how you make these things. But they're not things I recommend, so I don't really want to, you know. I don't mind sharing it, but I'm not trying to promote it. I don't want to promote it. But I think we boil it. I just remembered how to make it. You boil the weed, marijuana, or that is, or the hash. Do you do that with hash? We didn't boil the hash, so I don't know. But I knew somebody, I was staying with him at the time when we boiled the weed, the marijuana. I don't know if marijuana is too long a word, so you use a word like weed as a short form, or whatever, or a shorter word. You boil it in isopropyl alcohol, hopefully a pure isopropyl or whatever, but you boil it in isopropyl. It doesn't have to be pure because it could have water in it, I guess, but the isopropyl boils off. Is that true? Let me think. What are we trying to do? Oh, no, right. No, you're not. You're not trying to boil off at that point. You're just trying to boil. The isopropyl would boil off before the water would, so you don't want water in the isopropyl because you'd have water in the final result. I'm trying to think. Yeah, you don't want water in it, so you want a fairly pure isopropyl, I think. But then you boil the marijuana in the isopropyl until all the content within the marijuana comes out into the isopropyl alcohol. Then you get the, you know, fiber out. You remove all the fiber, and then you boil off all the isopropyl, and what you're left with is an oil. That's the oil. That's the weed oil. But first of all, you're trying to Yeah, so it's you're just boiling away all the isopropyl. So it's not like you're distilling it or anything. You're not trying to catch and recover what you're boiling off. You're just that's what boils off is just pure isopropyl alcohol, and what stays in the container is whatever you whatever products you derive from the weed that's in that's now dissolved in the isopropyl, and that stays there. And then, you know, as long as you soak it and boil it or whatever, you don't even have to boil it at first. I think you just soak it. That's right. You just soak the weed in the isopropyl for a few days. That's right. Then you take the weed out and then you boil the isopropyl to get rid of it, and you end up with the oil. So that's how they make it. But that stuff is addictive, and it's not good to do that. So, but then there's hash oil, so they make it some similar way, I guess, to that. I don't know. Maybe they have to grind up the hashish to, before they put it in the isopropyl to make it dissolve better or something. I'm not sure what they do because I've never seen that. But the honey oil, I don't know how they make that either. But all these were products that were marijuana related, right? So, but so I gave up all drugs. But in 1980, by that time, I wasn't using much drugs at all. I was just maybe an occasional joint of, you know, which is what you call a marijuana cigarette. But I mean, it was basically pretty occasional at that point. But I gave it all up permanently, totally gave it up in 1980. So then 4 years and some months later was when I moved here, and I started, when I wasn't doing the mail route, after a few years when I got the mail route, in 85 I couldn't have got it in 85, 90 maybe. 85 we moved here basically. I was working for a courier company at some point. I worked for Kirby Vacuum Cleaners, then a courier company. Then I eventually got a mail contract. Maybe it was 1990 I got the contract, something like that. Couldn't have been 85 because that was when we moved here. But maybe I was working for a courier company probably a few years earlier than that too. In 87, 88, I was probably working for the courier company. I worked for Ultimate Courier. Bob was the guy's name. I remembered his name. And Mona, I guess. Bob and Mona. Yeah, for Ultimate Courier. I remembered the name of the company, Ultimate Courier. And then Ultimate Courier got absorbed by Destination Courier. Roland was the guy in charge of that company. But, you know, Roland was a much bigger company. He had a much more, business mentality or something. Much more profit-oriented or something like that. But we had a government contract with Ultimate Courier that we were delivering the mail for the government. So that just became part of Destination Courier. I was working for the government through Destination Courier for a few years, and then, that was probably a 1 year contract, actually. That's just, I think, for maybe it was longer, I can't remember. But we did that, and then at some point I lost my job with the courier company. You know, they just were. You know, it was ridiculous. It was ridiculous how you lose a job when I was the most reliable driver ever. And they just didn't believe anything I told them or whatever. You know, it was ridiculous. But anyway, but they had a problem because they couldn't relate to, I was probably just too good for them or whatever. You know, it was that kind of thing. You always lose your job when you're too good for the job. Like, it always happens because the people can't believe that you're happy doing it or whatever it is. There's some problem. So you end up losing the job. But anyway, I can't remember if I was fired. I think I was fired, or maybe I don't think I quit that job. But it was, but I mean, you'd have a, we had the government contract, but then they'd expect us to do, like, you know, us, on the spot, you know, they assign us, you know, they dispatch us, right, on these hot shots, which were like, you've got to get between now, here and there in like 15 minutes or half an hour, whatever hot shot was, you had to get it delivered within a certain time. And if you couldn't do it in that time, you lost money, right? So that's the way the courier company worked now. And so they were expecting me to do a lot more than the government contract, which was I was doing in addition. And when it didn't work out the way they wanted it to, they were not happy, the boss, right? So, but it wasn't possible to get from point A to point B. You know, it wasn't possible to drive from where we were to where they wanted us to get in the time they wanted us to get there. You know, it wasn't possible. So they just weren't being intelligent at all. Anyway, so, I mean, they were, I guess what it was, you know, the boss had some weird ideas about he had some goals that he wanted to achieve, and when he didn't achieve them, he wouldn't be happy, that's all. And his goals weren't realistic, that's all. But that's the way we all are sometimes. We tend to have goals that are not realistic, and we don't meet the goals, and then, you know, but we don't set realistic goals. Today, I want to go out and do some raking of the leaves, so I want to get this study done. But so what I was thinking was, yeah, so I all the recordings I made, we started making them around 1985, but I was unemployed otherwise, so I would be able to make musical recordings. But I don't think I usually worked when Anne wasn't here, though. I basically slept when she wasn't here. That's what I think. But Anne was doing the mail route for quite a few years. I think something like 10 years or more, all told. But so they would renew the contract. Is that true? They'd renew the contract? Yeah, I think they renewed the contract every year. That's right. So the only reason I got the contract was because somebody wanted to stop doing it. Maybe they died or something happened. And whoever was doing it wanted to do something else, or they couldn't do it anymore. So I bid on the contract. Bob at Ultimate Courier gave me some insight on what to bid. I said, how much should I bid on this contract? I think he said $650, bid $650. Now that was, I guess, per month. Couldn't have been per year. $650 a month? Is that right? Yeah, so it's not a lot of money. But wait a minute, $20 a day. But you work only a couple hours to do the route, and then you're done, right? Anyway, I think it was $650. I remember the number he told me to bid. I had no idea how much to bid on a mail route, but Bob told me what the number to bid. And he didn't even think about it very long. How much should I bid on a rural mail route? He said, he paused for like 5 seconds or something, and then said $650 or something like that. So, I mean, he gave me the advice that I needed to get the job or to get the contract, and then I did the contract. I mean, I went with my wife, and then... I'm not sure if I did it by myself at all, but I went with her, and she did it. I didn't do it for very long, if I did it at all, but I think I did the mail route myself. Yeah, I think I did for the first little while, but it's not very interesting or anything, so, but she loved doing it, so Anne got the job, so she was doing it. She really loved doing it. She loved being the mail lady. She wrote that song about being a mail lady. And she loved doing it. So we did it for maybe 10 years or something. I mean, it was a long time we had that job. But is that true? $650 a month? It can't be $650 a year, obviously, right? That'd be $2 a day, so that's not it. $650 a month. It can't be a week either. We don't pay by the week here. Yeah, so it's got to be per month, $650 a month. It's not a lot of money either. But, you know, I mean, but it's $20 a day, you know. So it is significant. That sounds right. But anyway, but also the other thing was, what happened was after year one, we got a big pay increase. I remember that because they had not really told us all the... They had underestimated how much work it was. So after year one, we made some update, you know, to the... They asked us or something, or we were able to upgrade the pay, because we were able to say we were actually doing more. We were doing something like twice as much as what they said. I don't know what it was. We were doing a lot of work. We had way more work than what they said to deliver the mail. So, you know, it took a few hours to do it, I guess, during the day, right? Or at least a couple hours, maybe more. But we got a big increase in pay, but maybe the increase we got wasn't double, but we got a big increase. So then every year after that, we'd get also, you got cost of living increase, because cost of living, because it's the government and they do that. You know, they keep up with inflation. So, you know, every year we were getting that money, but Anne had her annuities and her retirement pension and all that. She just did that not for the money. She didn't need the money. She just did it because she loved doing it. And that's it. We didn't even need the money. But I wrote my songs, and I was basically, I had a lot of time on my hands, and I did research. We didn't have the internet until 1990, right? Or around 1990. So I wasn't doing research prior to that, but I went and bought the recording gear that I used in 87, the 16 track, and in 85, I think I bought the, it was around the time when I bought the 4-track recording, the Tascam 244 4-track cassette recorder, the MS-16 16 track 1-inch tape, that was, I bought that in 87, as I recall. But I was technical. I had the physics background. I had the engineering background. I could learn about electricity because I'd studied that. I learned about, what do you call it? Engineering, audio engineering. That's it, audio engineering. That's what you call it, I guess, right? That's what I was able to learn because I had the background in physics. And so I knew I could understand what decibels were. I could figure it out in terms of the logarithmic scale and all that. But anyway, so, but, you know, drug-free since 1980, that's still true now. Now it's 42 years drug-free. So it's one day at a time. Not, you know, you can only do it one day at a time. You stay away from something one day at a time. That's all you can do. You can't do better than that. And then that was from Jesus, too. He also, I'd already learned that prior to seeing it again. Well, we'd read the Bible when we were younger. You know, don't be anxious about the next day. We knew about that from when we were young, that Jesus had said this about not being anxious about the next day. But when I read it again, you know, after I started to really study the Bible in about 1987 or 1988, whenever that was exactly, I, you know, it was exactly in harmony with what I'd been doing, which is one day at a time, not worrying about what how are you going to stay away from alcohol tomorrow or whatever. I didn't drink. For me, it wasn't alcohol. But as an example, let's say you're an alcoholic. How are you going to, don't worry about tomorrow how to stay away from alcohol. All you have to do is stay away from it today. You just have to do that one day. Just stay away from it today. Don't worry about tomorrow. But tomorrow you'll have to do it again. You have to stay away from it for that one day again. But you don't worry about it in advance, because if you think, well, I won't be able to do it tomorrow, so I might as well quit today. That's the problem. I might as well give up trying to quit alcohol today, because I won't be able to keep doing it tomorrow, so I'll give up today. That's the wrong reasoning. Don't give up today just because you're worried about tomorrow. One day at a time is how things get done. So that's how I did everything. That's how I still do everything. So, to the director upon Mus Laban, a melody of David, Psalm 9. Jehovah, guide us. Help us to be open to the information that we're given and to understand it in a way that will make us better and happier people, in Jesus' name. Amen. So before I start, I was thinking about something else. It's interesting, brother, that's right, the brother who gave the talk on the meetings, Brother Curzan, is it? I think it's Brother Curzan. I think it's Ronald Curzon, but I'm trying to think, trying to remember. Do I have it here? Wait, okay, I had it here somewhere. Here we go. I've got it here. Ronald Curzon, yeah. He gave the talk on all of Jehovah's provisions. It wasn't just about the meetings, okay? It wasn't just about the meetings, but the meetings could mean different things to different people. It could be you listening to me right now could be a meeting. But I mean, and it could apply to people who aren't even in Jehovah's organization, but they're attending meetings somewhere in some company, right? It could, meetings can apply to a lot of different things. And depending on, you know, who is going and who's doing it, who you're talking, depending on the person that you're talking about. But also there are the publications too, for the Jehovah's publications, right? Which could include my publications, if I am believing in Jehovah. So all these things, but the, you know, we're wary of these problems. And I talked about the individuality issue. Being an individual can be hampered by going to meetings. So, and also these publications are not the Bible. So they can be taking us away from the Bible. So there are disadvantages to these things. And some people, you know, maybe they're maybe it's like alcoholism. They're addicted to the meetings, maybe, right? That's another thing. So if they can get away from it and stay away from it and still be healthy and happy and still be free of alcohol and drugs and vaping and cigarettes and free of all bad habits, or, you know, essentially free of all bad habits and not needing to attend meetings, that might be good. That would be great, right, if they could do that. As long as they're still able to live, you know, the kind of lives that they are happiest living. So we're not, it's not a question, but, you know, but there are some people who feel they need to go to meetings. That's the thing. Some people who feel they need to go to meetings and they feel there's benefits in the meetings. And there undoubtedly are benefits. The question, the thing is, there are also detriments. So that's the point. It's a question of this balance. There's things both ways. It goes both ways. There are, the side of effect is you lose some individuality. Right? You do. You're not as free, completely free, you know, to do what your calling might be. But being alone is also very sad. So, you know, it's we need some friends. We need some ways. So that's why now we have the internet. We've got the ability to communicate online. So it's pretty good. It's pretty good in that way. Okay. Let's do this. Psalm 9. I will laud you, O Jehovah. First of all, you know, little children, welcome. I will laud you, O Jehovah, with all my heart. I will declare all your wonderful works. I will rejoice and exult in you. I will make melody to your name, O Most High. When my enemies turn back, they will stumble and perish from before you, for you have executed my judgment and my cause. You have sat on the throne judging with righteousness. You have rebuked nations. You have destroyed the wicked one. Their name you have wiped out to time indefinite, even forever. O, you enemy, your desolations have come to their perpetual finish, and the cities that you have uprooted, the very mention of them will certainly perish. As for Jehovah, he will sit to time indefinite, firmly establishing his throne for judgment itself. And he himself will judge the productive land in righteousness. He will judicially try national groups in uprightness. And Jehovah will become a secure height for anyone crushed, a secure height in times of distress. And those knowing your name will trust in you, for you will certainly not leave those looking for you, O Jehovah. Make melody, you people, to Jehovah, who is dwelling in Zion. Tell among the peoples his deeds. For when looking for bloodshed, he will certainly remember those very ones. He is sure not to forget the outcry of the afflicted ones. Show me favor, O Jehovah. See my affliction by those hating me. O you who are lifting me up from the gates of death, in order that I may declare all your praiseworthy deeds in the gates of the daughter of Zion, that I may be joyful in your salvation. The nations have sunk down into the pit that they have made, in the net that they hid. Their own foot has been caught. Jehovah is known by the judgment that he has executed, by the activity of his own hands. The wicked one has been ensnared. Higgaion, Selah. Wicked people will turn back to Sheol, even all the nations forgetting God. For not always will the poor one be forgotten, nor will the hope of the meek ones ever perish. Do arise, O Jehovah! Let not mortal man prove superior in strength. Let the nations be judged before your face. Do put fear into them, O Jehovah, that the nations may know that they are but mortal men. That's Psalm 9. That sounds like it's got some similar ideas that we've seen before about men being merely mortal men. That came up in an earlier psalm, I believe. We could search that. Let's see. Mortal men. See if we find some psalms references. 9? Oh, maybe it's not mortal men. Right, maybe it's just mortal. But that'll bring a lot more. So we can't use that by itself. Merely mortal. No? Oh, mere mortals. That's what it was, I think. Mere mortals. If we search. Mere mortals. No results found. Okay. Mere mortal. Okay. That's not the one. But anyway. Only mortal? Yeah. That occurs. No. Wait a minute. It looked like it did occur, but it doesn't. Okay. Well, we can't search Psalms, but if I go to my other Bible research program, I can search the book of Psalms for the word mortal, which I can show you if I had it. Maybe I can do it. Okay. Let's try it. Let me try and do this. Okay, let's I'm going to try to run it from the other version of it. Try to run the other. There we go. Let's see what we have here. Where is it? Here? Yeah, right here. I think this will work. If I drag it over here, okay. Good. Should work. There it is. Yeah, it works really well now. I wouldn't have thought it would have gotten better, but it you upgrade your operating system eventually, you can have things work better, but old programs don't always work well, but this one does. Works better than it used to because the mouse is not captive. It's completely, what's that word? It's not, the mouse is automatically captive. Like it doesn't, it becomes captive and then it's free to move around. You can take the mouse outside the window. It's just not, you know, you don't need any shortcuts, keystrokes to escape. So we're going to search for Psalms. So we go into Psalms. PS, which is Psalms. I think that, and then we search for mortal. I think that'll do it. But no, zero. So I think we need to type out the whole word. Maybe that's it. Yeah. Psalms. Mortal. When we put it, the whole word Psalms in there, works. So if we look back, I had to go up. It's not working. It's strange, but why is it not working? My keyboard's not working. Can I do page up here? My other keyboard doesn't have a page up. It's interesting. Well, okay. It doesn't scroll. Interesting. It's not scrolling. Okay, but maybe I can click on the side here. I should be able to. Maybe. No. Oh, look. It's at the bottom. It's at the bottom here. You see this? The cursor. No, I'm not clickable. It's not clickable. It notices this. Oh yeah, what is that? There it is. What is mortal man that you keep him in mind? That's one. But that's not the one I'm thinking of. We see the verse, chapter 9. We see chapter 9 here, right? But I'm trying to get back. Okay. To the prior ones, and it's not letting me. That normally works on the other screen, so let me take it back. Okay. I don't know. It usually works. I thought it did anyway. So I'm going to try on the other one. I'm going to try the other program. Let's see. The other version of it now. Let's quit this. Let's try the other version, which you won't be able to see, but maybe it'll work. I need to allow access. There we go. Apologies for this delay here. Hopefully this will work, but maybe it won't. I think it will because I've used it before many times. Like, you know, many times. Well, there it is. It starts at the first one this time, not the last one. No, that's the only other time. Okay. Let's look for mortals. Zero. Okay. Mortal in Psalms. Mortals doesn't occur in Psalms. Okay. But if I say, let's look for the word mortal in the NWT, which is the whole New World Translation. And what does it say? It says the word mortal. I'm looking for the word mortals now. It doesn't occur in the whole Bible. Mortals, plural, does not occur. Mortal, singular, does. And we've already looked that up. Okay. All right. So we didn't really get any result there. But I know it talked about this in one of the Psalms. Well, maybe we can just find it. Let's see. Let's look at Psalms. Psalm 4. Yeah, it's good to review some of our previous studies. Six. Right. Talking about David, talking about his enemies, you know. Yeah, I feel like we've seen it before somehow, but it's not necessarily at the very end, but I'm feeling like it's near the end of the psalm. Two, kiss the sun. It's not chapter two. It's definitely after chapter two. Yeah, chapter three is that I shall not be afraid of 10,000s of people. That's a good part, verse in chapter three there. And it may not be in Psalms. It might have been in one of the other books that we studied too. Yeah, it might not be Psalms actually that I'm thinking of, but it's harder to find it if we have to search the whole Bible, but we can do it. If I had more time, I'd be able to find it, definitely. But I definitely feel that I could find that, but because we know what books we've been reading recently, so. anyway, there's that idea that we, I think it was David, though. He was asking, you know, Jehovah to not let his enemies feel like they were superior to God. Like, asking Jehovah to exercise vengeance on his enemies for that purpose. But there's more than that here, though, of course. Let not mortal man prove superior in strength. There it is. Well, that's verse 19. Let not mortal man prove superior in strength. Well, let's look at the cross reference. Yeah, that might show it. No, it doesn't have it. No. It doesn't have the verse we were looking at. It's got... Let me see if I can... show you that. I can't really show you this, but maybe I can make it small and move this. Oops, that's not good. Where am I? Okay, let's go back. There it is. So if I put this in the corner, there. Now you're going to see, this is where it is. It does refer to 1 Samuel and Daniel. There are references about this, that not by power does a man prove superior in 1 Samuel 2 and 9. 1 Samuel 2 and 9. And Daniel 5 and 21. That Nebuchadnezzar was driven away from the sons of men until he knew that the Most High God is ruler. Right? It's not men that are... ruling by their own power. They need to have Jehovah God giving them the power. They can't get it from their own source inside themselves only. It has to come from a superior place, Jehovah, you know, a superior person. A more powerful person has to give them that power. And there's the idea, the nations have sunk down into the pit that they have made. I wanted to play this Oscar Peterson song, too, so maybe let's try to get through this. But I wanted to find that other reference about... I really want to find it. Well, salvation belongs to Jehovah 3 and 8. It shows that people, men, are not the source of salvation. It's a recurring theme. I'm looking for one particular reference here. Oh, this is a good one. Oh, Psalm 4, be agitated, but do not sin. Have your say in your heart upon your bed and keep silent. That's a very good, I mean, that one, very memorable, that scripture, that verse. Oh, yeah. No, those loving your name will exult in you, Jehovah. That's another theme. And Jehovah shields the righteous. Psalm 5. Right, that was 5. Right, yep. The print is so small that I can't see it. Unless I'm looking at the big number there on the top left. Okay. Oh, yeah. Prayed for his enemies to be ashamed, right? That was 6. 7. There's the pit being excavated. And he will, the one who excavates a pit will fall into the hole that he went making. That's that principle, 7:15. We see that recurring. Yeah, I feel like it's not, it can't be Psalms, I guess. It's not Psalms. It's one of the other things we were reading, whether it was, it could have been Ecclesiastes, or it could have been, you know, or Proverbs, or Isaiah, or Song of Solomon, because Song of Solomon, because we've been reading those ones. No, yeah, and also, well, like I said, Isaiah. We're not going to look for that anymore right now, but Isaiah, this is the 9th chapter we're doing today, because it's the 29th. Is this a long chapter? It's not too long. However, the obscure, let's do it. Let's do it. We've got some time. However, Isaiah 9, however, the obscureness will not be as when the land had stress, as at the former time when one treated with contempt the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. Usually, the land Zebulun and the land Naphtali come together in the Bible. They're mentioned together. And when, at the later time, one caused it to be honored. The way by the sea, in the region of the Jordan, Galilee of the nations. That's where Jesus lived during the majority of his life. The people that were walking in the darkness have seen a great light. Right? Could be referring to the Messiah. As for those dwelling in the land of deep shadow, light itself has shone upon them. You have made the nation populous, for it you have made the rejoicing great. They have rejoiced before you as with the rejoicing in the harvest time, like this time of year, as those who are joyful when they divide up the spoil. For the yoke of their load and the rod upon their shoulders, the staff of the one driving them to work, you have shattered to pieces as in the day of Midian. For every boot of the one tramping with tremors and the mantle rolled in blood have even come to be for burning as food for fire. For there has been a child born to us, there has been a son given to us, and the princely rule will come to be upon his shoulder. And his name will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace. To the abundance of the princely rule and to peace there will be no end. Upon the throne of David and upon his kingdom, in order to establish it firmly and to sustain it by means of justice and by means of righteousness from now on and to time indefinite. The very zeal of Jehovah of armies will do this. There was a word that Jehovah sent against Jacob, and it fell upon Israel, and the people will certainly know it, even all of them, Ephraim and the inhabitant of Samaria, because of their haughtiness and because of their insolence of heart, saying, bricks are what have fallen, but with hewn stone we shall build. Sycamore trees are what have been cut down, but with cedars we shall make replacement. And Jehovah will set the adversaries of reason on high against him, and the enemies of that one he will goad on. Syria from the east and the Philistines from behind, and they will eat up Israel with open mouth. In view of all this, his anger has not turned back, but his hand is stretched out still. And the people themselves have not returned to the one striking them, and Jehovah of armies they have not sought. And Jehovah will cut off from Israel head and tail, shoot and rush in one day. The aged and highly respected one is the head, and the prophet giving false instruction is the tail. And those who are leading this people on proved to be the ones causing them to wander. And those of them who are being led on, the ones who are being confused. That is why Jehovah will not rejoice even over their young men, and upon their fatherless boys, and upon their widows, he will have no mercy. Because all of them are apostates and evildoers, and every mouth is speaking senselessness. In view of all this, his anger has not turned back, but his hand is stretched out still. For wickedness has become a flame just like a fire. Thorn bushes and weeds it will eat up, and it will catch fire in the thickets of the forest, and they will be borne aloft as the billowing of smoke. In the fury of Jehovah of armies, the land has been set afire, and the people will become as food for the fire. No one will show compassion even on his brother, and one will cut down on the right and will certainly be hungry, and one will eat on the left, and they will certainly not be satisfied. They will each one eat the flesh of his own arm. Ephraim Manasseh, together they will be against Judah. In view of all this, his anger has not turned back, but his hand is stretched out still. Isaiah chapter 9, talking about how Jehovah is showing compassion upon his people. He's asking them to return to him, to obey the righteous commands of Jehovah, to listen to what is good and righteous, and his hand is stretched out to them saying, come back to me, you know, I'll help you, I'm here for you. His hand continues to be stretched out, and yet they do not respond. Every mouth speaking senselessness, verse 17. Their fatherless boys and their widows, Jehovah will not have mercy upon, because all of them are apostates. And their young men, Jehovah will not rejoice over, for the same reason. But his hand is stretched out still. He offers them the opportunity to serve him. And when we look at the interesting thing, he says all of them are apostates. All of Jehovah's people are apostates, it says. Hopefully that's not true today, but the thing about Scripture is, it's whether it's true to any extent, to it's the extent to which it might be true, that it has bearing. It bears on whatever it bears on. If this is true, then the people who are guilty should be made aware of it, and they should come to know it simply by being told, by having this read to them, or by reading it themselves. They should become aware that they are guilty of apostasy. To whatever extent it is in fact the case. And Jesus says, or I think of Jesus when we read this wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Eternal Father, Prince of Peace, because that's the prophecy about the Messiah. A child born to us. Isaiah 9 and 6. So this is a very important chapter in Isaiah for that reason, that it refers to the Messiah and the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. The way by the sea in the region of the Jordan, Galilee of the nations, the people that were walking in the darkness have seen a great light. They have seen a great light because Jesus was there. But this is a prophetic statement long before Jesus, 600 years or something like that before Jesus. The exact year, 700 years actually before Jesus. Because it refers to Ahaz. And Ahaz was, as we read recently, Ahaz was referred to by Isaiah, but he was the father of Hezekiah, and he lived in 741. He ruled in that year. That's the year of his first year of rule, 741 in the genealogy. So Ahaz, so Isaiah lived in this time 740, 750 years before Jesus even arrived. More than that, before the time when Jesus was baptized. And we have, therefore, a prophetic statement about the Messiah here. And it's talking about David. Remember that? Upon the throne of David. Because Jesus was a descendant of David. Also, but also it's Isaiah doesn't know anything about Jesus. He's writing before that time. But he's writing about David, and Isaiah lived long after David. David ruled from 1058 to 1018 in the genealogy. And he was born in 1088 BCE. So that's a thousand. It's not a thousand. It's not a thousand. 300 years before Isaiah. David lived, and Isaiah is still talking about David here. Because we know David had a promise from Jehovah that his kingdom would be set up. If it's in the article, too. The article, Born and Raised Online, my article, on willofjehovah.com. The most recent article that I wrote. That article talks about David's throne being established, was one of the promises given to David. So even though it's 300 years later, 300 years after David was born, more than 300 years after David was born, Isaiah is talking about David here. David was not forgotten. There was a prophecy about the Messiah, and it concerned David, and Jesus was a descendant. As it turned out, he was a descendant in David's line. He was from the line of David. On, I believe it was both his mother's side and on his adoptive father's side, but his adoptive father was not his real father. Jehovah was his real father. So we have this wonderful, this is quite a powerful chapter in Isaiah. I'd like to get through because I'd like to play some Oscar Peterson if we can. John chapter 9. Now as he was passing along, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him. And by the way, if you download the Insight books from the jw.org website, in the beginning, near the beginning of the book, there's a photograph with numbers, and then on the next page or two, it shows what the numbers refer to, and the Pool of Siloam is shown as far as where it is in Jerusalem on that picture. You can see where the Pool of Siloam is, and that's where Jesus healed the man. I think that was yesterday we read about that, or was it the previous day? It was chapter 7, I guess. I think. The Pool of Siloam. I don't see it. Okay, let me look it up. Yeah, that we should be able to find. That we should be able to find. Siloam. It's not a common word. Oh, no. Okay, that's this one here. It's this chapter. Okay, so maybe it was a different pool. I'm going to look up the word disturbed. The water is disturbed. Hopefully this won't take long. Oh, it was John 5. That was a long time ago. We read that a few days ago. So it was at the sheep gate. So this is Bethzatha. That pool was Bethzatha. Okay, so that was where the man was in John chapter 5. But when we look back, we're at John chapter 8. It's the Pool of Siloam. So if you download the Insight books from Will of Jehovah, you should be able to find out where to download those by searching on the website. I downloaded them yesterday, actually. But in the up-to-date version, the beginning of the book, they have a picture. I'm not sure if they have it in the older versions or not, because I didn't look there, but they have this picture of Jerusalem, and they show where this Pool of Siloam is in Jerusalem. I can show you that, actually. Let me show you that. Where is it? It's in my download. volume 1 or 2, I'm not sure. I guess it's volume 1. Must be. So if I look here, let's see. Where is it? You'd think it would be volume. There it is, yeah. So there's the Pool of Siloam, 10. I'm going to show you in a second here. Let me show you. Let me get this smaller so I can bring it over here. Here it is. So, yeah. So the Pool of Siloam, right, coming. That was it. We just saw it. It's right there. I went past it. Here it is. The Pool of Siloam. It was 10 and 11. The Pool of Siloam. In the first century, it was in. The Pool of Siloam was 11. See that? If you can see that. Hang on a second here. I need to make this thing bigger. There we go. It's number 11 on the drawing. First century CE. That's when Jesus was there. It was in that time period of Jesus. In the time of Jesus, the pool was 11. Here it is, 11. So there it is. In the picture of Jerusalem where the temple is here, up there where today they have the Islamic temple, but in the time of Jesus, that was the temple of the Israelites, right? This, and now this is where the Pool of Siloam is, number 11. Okay, so that's how you can do that. You can download this from the jw.org website. Now, as Jesus was passing along, he saw a man blind from birth, and his disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned? Rabbi, who sinned? This man or his parents, so that he was born blind?" Jesus answered them, "Neither this man sinned nor his parents, but it was in order that the works of God might be manifest in his case. We must work the works of him that sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no man can work. As long as I am in the world, I am the world's light." After he said these things, he spit on the ground and made a clay with the saliva and put his clay upon the man's eyes and said to him, "Go, wash in the Pool of Siloam," which is translated "sent forth." So he went off and washed and came back seeing. This is a 41-verse chapter, by the way. He came back seeing. He regained his sight. Therefore, the neighbors and those who formerly used to see he was a beggar began to say, "This is the man that used to sit and beg, is it not?" Some would say, "This is he." Others would say, "Not at all, but he is like him." The man would say, "I am he." Consequently, they began to say to him, "How then were your eyes opened?" He answered, "The man called Jesus made a clay and smeared it on my eyes and said to me, 'Go to Siloam and wash.' I therefore went and washed and gained sight." At this they said to him, "Where is that man?" He said, "I do not know." They led the once blind man himself to the Pharisees. Incidentally, it was Sabbath on the day that Jesus made the clay and opened his eyes. This time, therefore, the Pharisees also took up asking him how he gained sight. He said to them, "He put a clay upon my eyes, and I washed, and I have sight." Therefore, some of the Pharisees began to say, "This is not a man from God, because he does not observe the Sabbath." Others began to say, "How can a man that is a sinner perform signs of that sort?" So there was a division among them. Yeah, how can a man that is a sinner perform signs of that sort? Hence they said to the blind man again, "What do you say about him, seeing that he opened your eyes?" The man said, "He's a prophet." However, the Jews did not believe concerning him that he had been blind and had gained sight, until they called the parents of the man that gained sight, and they asked them, "Is this your son, who you say was born blind? How then is it he sees at present?" Then in answer his parents said, "We know that this is our son and that he was born blind, but how it is he now sees, we do not know, or who opened his eyes, we do not know. Ask him. He is of age. He must speak for himself. His parents said these things because they were in fear of the Jews, for the Jews had already come to an agreement that if anyone confessed him as Christ, he should get expelled from the synagogue. This is why his parents said, "He is of age. Question him." Therefore, a second time, they called the man that had been blind and said to him, "Give glory to God. We know that this man is a sinner." In turn, he answered, "Whether he's a sinner, I do not know. One thing I do know, that whereas I was blind, I see at present." Therefore, they said to him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered them, "I told you already, and yet you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? You do not want to become his disciples also, do you?" At this they reviled him and said, "You are a disciple of that man, but we are disciples of Moses. We know that God has spoken to Moses, but as for this man, we do not know where he's from." In answer, the man said to them, "This certainly is a marvel that you do not know where he is from, and yet he opened my eyes. We know that God does not listen to sinners, but if anyone is God-fearing and does his will, he listens to this one. From of old, it has never been heard that anyone opened the eyes of one born blind. If this man were not from God, he could do nothing at all." In answer, they said to him, "You were altogether born in sins, and yet are you teaching us?" And they threw him out. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out, and on finding him, he said, "Are you putting faith in the Son of Man?" The man answered, "And who is he, sir, that I may put faith in him?" Jesus said to him, "You have seen him, and besides, he that is speaking with you is that one." Then he said, "I do put faith in him, Lord." And he did obeisance to him. And Jesus said, "For this judgment I came into the world, that those not seeing might see, and that those seeing might become blind. For this judgment I came into this world, that those not seeing might see, and those seeing might become blind." Those of the Pharisees who were with him heard these things, and they said to him, "We are not blind also, are we?" Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you would have no sin. But now you say we see. Your sin remains." That is a truly remarkable chapter of John. John chapter 9. Giving a lot of details. We know who wrote it. John wrote it. It implies John must have been present for all of these things. John must have been very, very nearby, right there to hear all of this because it's so detailed. Either that or John knew somebody who was close to it. But it's just too detailed. It can't be a secondhand account. It's got to be firsthand. You can see it. You can read it. You can just see it from the detail. Everything is there. You can almost get a sense of the actual tone of voice that was used and the emotions that were present in the people and all of these things. So that was at the Pool of Siloam. Jesus made a clay. We've been making foot powder clay out of clay. I've been making anyway. I hope someone else has been doing that too. But I know people are able to do it. There are recipes for these things, but no one has a recipe that I don't know anyone, that's what I mean to say, that who has a recipe I don't know anyone who has a recipe similar to the recipe that I gave, that I reverse engineered. I don't know anyone, but I've got four different versions of that recipe that I've enumerated in one of my videos, so in a couple of my videos, probably for some of them. So Oscar Peterson, listen to this. This is an amazing song here, "Soft Winds." It was performed live at the Montreux Jazz Festival, according to this. and it's part of a mix of from Mantra. It's called Mantra quote 77. Mantra 77 on YouTube is a mix of seven songs, or a, not a mix, but what do you call them? It's a playlist. Yeah, this is the final song on the playlist. Thank you. That was it. Soft Winds, Oscar Peterson. And there was something I was listening to the other day. Yeah, where is it? I'm going to find it now. I want to find it. It was very good. Whatever it was. Where is it now? Is it here? But there's something here. Well, that's something else. Yeah, that's something also by Oscar Peterson. But there's another thing. It's called the Oscar Peterson 4. It has Joe Pass on guitar. Let's go to history. Oscar Peterson 4. It doesn't come up. Well, that's interesting. That's a good one, too. How are we doing for time here? We're getting low on time. Yeah. So I guess I'll have to come back to this later. Try and find it. Oh, there's a great song. This is a great song. We'll go out with this song. It's Band Call. Band Call. It's from the... it's in the other... It's in the Night Train playlist. Also, Psalm 7 and 16, let me leave you with this. His trouble will return upon his own head. Psalm 7 and 16. David writing about his enemies. In fact, he's writing about Cush, the Benjaminite. That's right. This is Ward Green. It's October 29th, 2022, 14:54 hours. I hope you have a great day. Enjoy life. Bye for now.